Good morning. Great to see you guys today. You just heard about an initiative that we're doing for this month as a church. And if this is your first time, or if Next Level is even not your church, this is something you can participate in. You don't have to go to Next Level to help out with this. There's a current waiting list of 100,000 kids that for simply $10 a month, one of those kids gets off the waiting list and gets fed. But it's not just about food, though. They also get an education, and they learn about Jesus. And so we have adopted a village. We've adopted them for a year now as Next Level Church. And our goal is to raise enough support that 100% of that village has food, that everyone there can get a Christian education, can learn about God, and can get food. And so I want to make sure that you guys hear this, though. Please hear this, okay? If you cannot give, there is no guilt, there is no pressure, there is no arm twisting. If you cannot give, I understand. Sometimes finances are tough, okay? So do not go into credit card debt. Do not get all emotional because you saw a video of a little kid and give something and then not be able to afford it. There's none of that here. If you're here today, though, and you feel like God is stirring something in you to provide, we would love for you to partner with us. And what my wife and I do is we sponsor two kids, one for each of our kids. So we've just said we have two kids. We're going to adopt two kids through this program. And so for over a year, we've been giving $20 a month, so 10 for each kid, towards this program. And 100% of the proceeds go to actually feed the kids. Next Level gets none of this money. And so if you're interested at all, if that feels like something that you're called to do, want to do, can commit to do for at least a year, these envelopes are in your chair with a pen. And at some point before the end of the service, just fill this out and put this in the drop box or hand this to one of our ushers on your way out, and we'll take care of the rest. But there is something a little bit even more with this. If you cannot commit to $10 a month, just finances are too tough for you, there's no way for you to do that, you can give a one-time gift. And I just think it would be really cool. I think it would go a long way if today at our church we're going to have somewhere between 340 and 360 people. If everybody just gave 10 bucks, you may not can do it monthly. Maybe that's all you could give. Maybe you can only give five. But if everybody gave 10 bucks, all that money would go to help end hunger in our village. And so if you can only give 10 bucks, one-time gift, you can put that in here as well and hand it to the ushers on the way out. Again, there's absolutely no pressure. And I want to give us a chance just to simply talk to God and pray to him before we dive into our talk. And maybe at this time you can even ask him, God, hey, do you want me to give anything? Is this something that you want me to participate in? And again, there's no pressure if you don't feel called or led to do it. But I'd also like to invite you to spend a few moments just talking to God. And whenever I go before God and want to hear from him, I say the same prayer every time. I say, God, would you speak to my heart? But then I take it a step further, because it's not just that I want God to speak to me. It's that I need the courage to do whatever he tells me to do. Because I am convinced that when God speaks, he tells us to do difficult things. I've never been a person who heard God say, hey, today I want you to play the lottery because I'm going to bless you with $10 million. I've never heard that voice of God. Whenever I feel like God is stirring or speaking, it is always to go love someone I don't want to love. It's to do something I don't want to do. He is challenging me and loving me to do things that are difficult. And so we need the courage to listen, not just to listen to him, but to obey him. And so I want to give you a chance to pray that simple prayer and talk to him before we dive in to our text for today. So would you just close your eyes and spend a few moments just simply talking to God? God, I just think it is so cool that we can talk to you at the exact same time and that you can hear every single one of our prayers. And it's not just our church, God. It's literally just millions of people around the world that are coming to you and praying to you. And you're such a big God that you can hear all of our prayers. And so, God, we just ask right now that you would speak in a personal way. God, to those who are hurting and are even doubting whether you love them or whether you even exist, God, would you just say something today to confirm how close and how real you are? And God, to those who are just hitting it out of the park and are having an awesome week, God, would you say something to them to remind them to bring their greatness and bring the good things that are happening and to give it back to you? Would you just say not what we want to hear, but what we need to hear? And would you give us the courage to obey you no matter how hard it is? In Jesus' name, amen. Well, today we're continuing our series, Masquerade, and today is actually the last day of our series. That means next week we're going to dive into a whole new topic and a whole new series. So if this is your first week, I want to catch you up to speed. If you've missed all the other weeks, this is the main idea of this series called Masquerade. Underneath your mask is a wound that comes from a part of yourself being rejected either by yourself or by others. I'm going to read it again. Underneath your mask is a wound that comes from a part of yourself being rejected either by yourself or by others. I am convinced that every single person in this room wears a mask. And the reason we wear a mask is because we've been wounded. But the wound is not always because something someone else has done to us. Oftentimes the wound is self-inflicted, that we believe we're not good enough, we believe we don't add up, that we don't measure up, and so we start pretending, we start hiding our flaws and pretending to be something that we're not because we don't want to be rejected by other people. And this whole series, everything about this series started from a conversation I had with a friend of mine. We were eating lunch together, and he was talking to me about some difficulties that he was going through, some personal struggles, some mistakes that he's made, just some kind of big junk that happens in life. And what he said to me is that he couldn't go to his church because at his church he would only feel judgment. And he said that it's sad, but that he found more comfort and more acceptance in the bar than he found in the church. And that thought that he said is not a new thought. It's not an original thought to him. In fact, there is a literal quote that says, if you want honesty, don't go to church, go to a bar. That personally for me breaks my heart. Why is it that at a bar it is safe to be yourself, but in the church you have to pretend to be better than you truly are? And I just want to make sure, as we're ending this series, as this is the last day, I want to make sure you know what type of church you're at today. We are not a perfect church. And if you're new and if you're looking for a perfect church, I want you to hear this. When I say we're not a perfect church, I don't just mean that we have a few little tiny issues that we're kind of working on. I mean that everyone you're sitting around is jacked up. I'm going to speak on behalf of everyone in this room. Everyone is jacked up. Everyone has some flaws. Everyone has some issues. Everyone has some things that they're working on. There are some things in every single person in this room that we're a little bit embarrassed about, that we say, I should have this down. I should be better than I am. We all have some skeletons in our closet. We all have some issues. We have some junk. And when I'm speaking on your behalf, I'm not just saying you have junk. I'm saying I have junk too. As the pastor of Next Level Church, there are some things in my life that I'm constantly working on. I am a work in progress. I'm not a finished product. If you don't believe me, we're talking about taking off masks. Let me just take off some masks and just share with you some of my flaws. I love food that is not good for me. Love it. But I want to make sure that you guys really hear this. I want to make this really practical so you can really see who I am. It's not just that I love food. I really love food. My wife and I, since the beginning of August, early July, or late July, we've been on a diet, a program that we've been following. We've had great success. But a couple weeks ago, I was charged with bringing my kids pizza home for dinner. So I brought my kids pizza home, and I did my part. I resisted eating pizza, and I watched them eat it, and I got a little bitter inside, but I resisted fussing at them or letting my anger go out on them. I resisted eating the pizza. I felt great about my decision, but just in full transparency, at 9 o'clock that night, I ate their crust. They ate the pizza. They left some crust. The story's not done, though. The crust was in the trash can, y'all. Just being transparent. I had recently taken out the trash. There was nothing else in there but the crust. And I walked by at 9 p.m. and I said, that is a waste of a perfectly good crust. Somebody should eat that. And so I ate the crust from the trash can. I have some issues. The struggle is real. On my computer and on my phone, I have some internet safety. It's called Covenant Eyes. And this is something, if you're not familiar with, I can't encourage you strongly enough to become familiar with Covenant Eyes, especially if you're a guy, and especially if you're a parent and you have young kids becoming teenagers, especially boy teenagers. Covenant Eyes is something you need on their smartphone, on their computer, on their tablets. It is something you need. And let me just tell you why I have Covenant Eyes on there. It is an accountability software that sends a friend that I've chosen everything that I look at online. It sends them a report. Now, why do I have this? I have this because if I didn't have it, I would struggle with looking at half-naked or full-naked women online. It is easy to do. And so this is not something that I have on there because it's like, oh, I'll never struggle with this. I'm good to go. I'll never have a temptation. No, I have it on there because it is a temptation. I am not perfect. I care a lot about your approval. And I constantly am trying to work against that and care more about what Jesus thinks about me than what you think about me. But it is a constant struggle of mine. I care way too much about what other people think about me. Last Friday, a week ago, was Boss Appreciation Day. And you want to know the meme that my wife put on my Facebook page? This is what she posted on my Facebook page. Would I rather be feared or loved? Easy. Both. I want people to be afraid of how much they love me. I shouldn't feel that way, but I do. And when you watch the show The Office, I don't know if you've ever seen the show The Office, but Michael Scott, the guy in that picture, he's not the one that you should relate to, but I do. And I watch how much and how hard he works to get other people to love him. I shouldn't, but I do. I overanalyze everything. I try not to. It is a blessing and a curse. Sometimes it helps me because I analyze conversations and I think, okay, you said something that was kind of harsh, or you said something that was mean, and I can go back and try to fix it. So sometimes it's a good thing, but a lot of times it is a bad thing that I'm overanalyzing things that no one should be analyzing. And this situation has passed and hours have gone by, and I'm up at night thinking about a situation because I'm overanalyzing. It is an issue that I work on. You want to talk about worry? I believe with all my heart that we should bring our worry to God. I think that's what you should do. That's what I strive to do. I've heard the phrase, you just need to believe in God and let go and let God. I believe all that. But can I tell you something? Right now, I am stressed to the max. Like, not just a little stress. Like, the worry level is really, really high. Let me tell you why, just so that we can be real and masks can come off. My wife and I absolutely hate debt. We cannot stand it. We don't have credit card debt. We've never had credit card debt. We try to live. If we can't own it, if we can't pay for it with cash, we don't buy it. We paid for both our cars. We have no car debt. We bought our van by handing them cash. It's the most money I've ever had in my hand. I had cash, and I handed it to them and bought a van with cash. We hate debt. But can I tell you what's happened in our life? In the last 2 months, we incurred $15,000 credit card debt because two bathrooms fell apart and our kitchen flooded. And at night, and I'm trying to let go and let God. God, you got to provide. God, you got to do this. And you know what? I am worried. I am stressed about it. You know what conversations my wife and I are having? We're having, how can we raise more money? What can we do? And I'm like, babe, I have no other skills. All I can do is preach. I've got nothing else. We've been brainstorming. Like, literally, I've been brainstorming selling chocolate chip cookies because people like my cookies. And I'm like, will anyone pay for these cookies? Like, what if I make them and, like, sell them? Like, can I make some money to pay? Like, literally, these are real-life conversations we're having. There are some things in my life that I'm not proud of. I pick my nose. Specifically, I pick my nose in my car. I feel like the car should be a safe place. It is my domain. And so if you drive past me and you see me picking my nose, you just need to let it go and drive on. It is my place. Take care of stuff. I've got issues. I've got some things that I'm working on. I am not perfect, and you're not perfect either. And here's the question that I want us to wrestle with. The question is, are you going to stick around to love other people when they stop wearing a mask and start being real? We love to love people when they're lovable, but the question is, are you going to stick around and love someone when their mask comes off and they say, hey, this is the real me? When they show you the ugly side of them, when they show you their addiction, when they show you their problem, when they're not easy to be around, are you going to love them then? And if that's the type of love you want, you've got to extend that type of love to other people. We all wear masks, and the masks come from covering some type of wound in our life. And last week through YouVersion, the app that we use to get a little bit more out of this talk, I asked the question, what was the cause of your wound? And the answers were anonymous, but I want to share with you, just so that you know you're not alone, that you're not the only one that goes into hiding, you're not the only one that pretends, you're not the only one that's been hurt. Some of the top answers that came up were a lack of my father's engagement in my life, perceived I was less than a man in his eyes. Can I just tell you that the number one answer of where the wound came from our church, was from dads who weren't there for their kids? And can I just challenge you real quick? If you are a father, if you've got kids, I don't care if they're little, if they're toddlers, if they're teenagers, or if they're grown, you've got to show up and be present, because we are ruining a generation of kids. Because we'd rather be on our cell phone and we'd rather watch football than actually dive in and get to know our kids. And it came up over and over again that the wound that was caused the most in our church was because dads were not there for their kids. Abandonment. Abandonment is what caused a wound, that someone felt alone, that someone left, that they needed love, and the person they needed love from said, I'm out of here. This is too difficult. I can't do it. I like the wording of this one, but it was sad to me. It says, it seems like my deepest wounds have come from the way I've been treated by people that claim to be Christians. I have felt rejected by the Christian world for a long time. That's not a write-up from some anonymous person who is online or on a blog or on Facebook. That's a write-up from someone that goes to our church that they feel rejected. Their wound has come from other Christians. This one was incredibly authentic. Their wound comes from sexual abuse, affair, abortion, and not feeling good enough. Another wound, self-esteem issues have changed the way I go about my life. Whether they inflicted by myself or others, they've caused me to think this way. Another one, being physically abused for 7 years as a child. This came up over and over again. And if you're here today and you feel like no one can relate to your wound, that no one has experienced what you've gone through, I promise you there's someone else in this room has gone through exactly what you've gone through. And when we experience a wound, we think we have to go into hiding because we feel ashamed of what was done to us or what we've done. And we feel like no one else can relate to it. But the truth of the matter is, everything that you've gone through, someone else has gone through that exact same thing. And the question is, are you going to take off your mask to let other people in and learn to love other people when they take off their mask? Are you going to love the true, real them? I love this quote by John Ortberg. He's an author and a pastor. He says, to accept people is to be for them. It is to recognize that it is a very good thing that these people are alive and to long for the best for them. It does not, of course, mean to approve of everything they do. It means to continue to want what is best for their souls, no matter what they do. That is true love. That is true community, to want what is best for someone's soul, even when you disagree with them, even when you don't get along with them, even though you wish they would do something different or be someone different, you are still wanting what is best for their soul. And I believe that the challenge for us today as we conclude this series is to learn how to love other people, not just their masks, not just their facades, not just the people that are like us, but to truly be a welcoming source of love so that we can change that saying that people would no longer say, hey, if you want honesty, go to a bar. That people would actually say, if you want honesty, go to a church. It's a place where you can be real and find acceptance and find love. Our text for today is going to challenge us to do that, and I want to give you a little bit of context. Our text comes from what we call the New Testament portion of the Bible, and it is from a letter called Romans. It is written by a guy named Paul, and Paul is a primetime player because he wrote over half of the New Testament. He is an incredibly important figure in the life of Christianity. And Paul wrote a letter to this church in Rome, and for 11 chapters, his main theme, his main idea, is that you are saved by grace alone. Now, this is really important, especially if you're here today and you're a Christian, because Paul is saying, listen, you are not saved because you were born into a Christian household. You are not saved because you are an American. You are not saved because you've given some money to a church. You are not saved because you go to church. Thinking that you are a Christian because you go to church is like thinking you magically become a Krispy Kreme donut when you walk into Krispy Kreme. It just doesn't make sense. You are not something just because you go somewhere. You are a Christian because you believe in Jesus. And that belief is through faith alone. It's not because of your works or your efforts or because you're a good person or because you've done some good things. You are saved strictly through faith and grace alone in Jesus. And Paul makes that case so clear. But then he flips the script and he says, once you get this, once you understand that you're saved by grace alone, you have a part to play. You have a response to receiving this free love of God. And so in chapter 12, he starts to make this case of if you're a Christian, if you've received this free grace, this is the way you should respond. And he says in Romans 12, verse 9, he says, love must be sincere. Hate what is evil. Cling to what is good. Love must be sincere. There is a folklore that talks about that word sincere. And I don't know if this folklore is 100% truth or it's just based off legend, but I love it. I love the idea of it. And the idea of it is that the word sincere is Latin, and it comes from two words, sin, which means without, and cera, which means wax. So literally, sincere, according to the legend, means without wax. Now, specifically, where this legend came from is in Greece and in Rome, there were people who were crooks. And they would sell things like statues or pottery, and they would sell them to the general public. And the pottery that they would have cracks in it or would break or would chip off. and they would take this wax or this molding clay, and they would fill it in the cracks, and they would paint over it and then sell it to people as if the pottery was whole. But when people would get it home and they'd put it out in the sunlight, the wax would melt, and they would see, people would see that they got ripped off, that they bought something that was cracked. And so the legend says that those that were honest selling pottery would have this sign over their market, over the pottery that they were selling, and the sign would say sincere, which simply meant without wax. That when you come in here and you buy stuff, it's not broken, it's not jacked up, it's not messed up. That when you buy something, it is whole. And I love that wording, that idea of sincerity, because I feel like we are all broken vessels who have learned to fill our cracks with wax. We are pretending to be something that we're not. We're pretending to be better than we are, and we're hoping that people won't see our wax melt. But what Paul says is, Paul says that love is sincere. It's this idea, love is without wax. That love is saying, hey, you know what, you've got some cracks, you've got some flaws, you've got some issues, but I'm going to love you through that. I'm not leaving, I'm not taking off when I see the real you. You can't scare me off by your issues and your cracks and your flaws. I am here for you. Love must be sincere. And why does Paul say this? I think Paul had to have said this to the early church, to early Christians, because they struggle with something just like us. We struggle with loving people sincerely. I don't know if you do this often, but I'm betting that there are some things in your life that you pretend to do that you don't really do. Things like you tell someone, yeah, I'm going to pray for you, and then you never pray for them. Or you tell people, hey, I'll be there for you. Anything you need, just give me a call. And yet when they call, you send them a voicemail because you don't truly want to help them. Or you say things like, hey, I'm going to miss you so much. Like, I can't live without you. Like, we're going to stay in touch, knowing full well that you're never going to contact them again. We say things to people to make them feel better. We say, hey, oh, I love you. You're a great friend. Oh, I love hanging out with you. And then when they leave, we talk bad about them behind their back. We have forgotten what it means to love people sincerely. And we've traded in true, sincere love for this fake, artificial wax that is filling our cracks, and we're all just playing our part. In an effort to help people like us, we've forgotten how to love people sincerely. We so desperately want likes that we'll do anything for a like, and we've forgotten that what we truly crave is love. We don't want people just to like a facade or like us based off our performance or for what we can do. We really want love, and yet we don't offer people the one thing that we want. We don't communicate with other people that, hey, I am a safe person to be around. You don't have to wear a mask. You don't have to pretend. I don't love you for what you provide or for what you can do or for how good you are. I love you because you're a part of my life, and I'm choosing to love you. Love must be sincere. If you are single, there's a great chance that you know what the website Tinder is. If you're not single, then I hope you don't know what that is. And let me just give you a piece of advice. If you're married, get off Tinder, okay? You don't need to be on Tinder if you're married, okay? But Tinder is a dating website that singles have loved. It's kind of like swept the country. And Tinder has added something unique to the whole dating service, and it's why it's taken off. And if you're not familiar with Tinder, this is a write-up of what Tinder is from its own website. It says, unlike real life, on Tinder, you only get messages from the people you're interested in. Chats only get unlocked when both people swipe right on each other. That way you know the feeling is mutual. No more messages from people you don't want to talk to. So Tinder has introduced this idea that if I like something about someone, I swipe to the right. If I don't like something about them, I just swipe to the left and I dismiss them so that I never have to hear from them again. And this idea of swiping may have come from Tinder, but it's something that we've been doing for years. You don't need an app or a website to be swiping people to the right or left. We swipe people all the time. If you don't agree with me, if I don't like your ideas, if I don't like what you're bringing to the table, if you start to be difficult in my life, swipe to the left. I'm done with you. I'm going to hide your Facebook posts. I'm going to pretend I don't know you. I'm going to distance myself because you are difficult. But if you benefit me, if you can make me feel good, if you can bring a service that I can enjoy, then I'll swipe to the right because I like what you're producing. I like what you can do for me. The problem is that love is not swipeable. I think I made up that word, swipeable. You can't just swipe away love. You can't just say to someone, hey, I love you because you make me feel a certain way, and then when they no longer make you feel that way, you just discard them as if they have no worth. That is not love. Paul says love must be sincere, without wax. It is loving people, cracks and all, brokenness and all. It is saying, you can't shake me. I'm here for you. That is what love truly is. And as a Christian, we are called to love each other sincerely. Why? Because that is the type of love that God gives us. And we receive a sincere love from God. And then our response then is to love each other sincerely, to love each other real. I love this quote by Parker J. Palmer. It says, community is that place where the person you least want to live with always lives. And when that person moves away, someone else arises to take his or her place. We love this idea of community, and we love this idea of belonging, but we live with this facade that says, okay, one day we're going to find perfect relationships, and one day we're going to be in a relationship where someone else will make me happy, and they won't come with flaws, and they're going to know exactly what I'm feeling, and there won't be conflict, there won't be drama, but that's not community. That's fake. That's with wax. True community is when you say, hey, this is who I truly am, and I hope that you can love me even though I've got some flaws and imperfections. And you loving me doesn't mean that you agree with everything that I do. If you see me digging in a trash can for my kid's crust, you should stop me. I'm supposed to be on a diet. It does not mean that you approve and say, oh, that's a difficult conversation. Rob, I'm just going to let you be. No, you say, get your hand out of the trash. What is wrong with you, boy? Sometimes love is having difficult conversations. It is not agreeing with everything that everybody does, but it is letting people know that you cannot shake me. I love you for who you are. Now, let me give just a brief disclaimer here. This type of love is not talking about continually putting yourself in a situation where you are being abused. You can love someone from a distance, and you may not give up on someone that's abusing you, but love, a sincere love, does not mean you allow someone to hit you continually or to verbally abuse you. That is not love. And sincere love does not mean you keep letting someone beat the tar out of you over and over again. No, love is separating yourself and getting whole and figuring out why you would allow another human being to treat you that way. That's love. So when I'm talking about this sincere love, it's not some abusive relationship. It is the everyday relationships that we encounter where we feel like we have to pretend to be something that we're not because we're so afraid if we let our guard down, they're going to leave. And that is the fear. That is the reason why we wear masks, because we're so afraid that someone is going to leave us if they see the true us. Paul goes on to say in Romans 12:10, in the very next verse, he says, be devoted to one another. In love, honor one another above yourself. You want to know how the mask will come off, how you can allow other people to take their masks off? Do what Paul says. Devote yourself to one another in love. What does it mean to devote yourself? What it means simply to tell someone, hey, you can't shake me. You can't get rid of me, okay? I'm going to love who you are, no matter who you are really is. I'm devoted to you. And what if we let people know how devoted we were to people? I think that they would start to take off their mask and say, you know what, I can be myself around you. And you're not going to judge me for having these crazy thoughts and having these crazy just dreams and crazy things and crazy habits, that I can be myself around you and know that you will truly love me for who I am. I love this idea, this quote by Donald Miller. He's an author. He says, why is it that loving other people in our lives becomes so much more than just showing up and paying attention? Why is it that loving other people in our lives becomes so much more than just showing up and paying attention? We all have our definitions of love. We all have these ideas of what love is. But what if simply loving someone was paying attention? What if simply loving someone was being devoted to them and honoring them and saying, hey, you can't shake me. I know you've had some bad days. I know you've been depressed. I know you get angry sometimes. I know you're not perfect. I know you've got some flaws, but you can't shake me. I am devoted to who you are. What would happen if we love people that way? There's a problem with the way that we love, and it's based off psychology, but according to psychology, the reason that we love people best early on is out of selfish reasons, that your relationship is the most loving within the first few months of meeting someone. Because there's something inside of you that wants them to accept you. So you don't present your true self. You present what you think they want to see. And so this is why early on in dating, like, guys will talk on the phone for hours and hours, even though they hate talking on the phone. And it's why girls dress a certain way and act a certain way. We perform to get other people to love us. But this is how broken we are. Psychologists say that after 3.5 years, if someone has stuck by our side, we no longer perform for them. That is, that we feel so comfortable that they're not going to leave, that we take off our mask and we're our true selves. Now, that should be a good thing. That should be the goal. But the problem is, we're so broken, after 3.5 years, we start to take people for granted. The human, the natural thing for you and I to do is to perform for new relationships, and then after about 3.5 years, we take someone for granted. And this is why husbands start to forget anniversaries. And this is why wives forget to call Victoria and ask her what her secret is. We take the people, let this sink in, we take the people closest to us for granted. You and I are broken human beings. And what if love, true love, was not just an emotion or a feeling or liking people who make us feel a certain way, but what if true love was simply paying attention to the people that are closest to us? How different would our world be if we simply said, I care and I pay attention to who you are? In my office, it is filled with all sorts of knickknacks and memories and autographed posters and action figures, and it's like my childhood is thrown up all over my office. There's just stuff everywhere. And I put the stuff in my office not just so that I can stare at it during the day, but I literally put stuff in my office because I do want to show it off. I want people to notice. And there's stories behind the things that are in my office. And there is on my shelf a baseball that's in a case. And this baseball has been in not just the office that I have here at this church, but it's been in my offices for 15 years. Whenever, as long as I've worked at a church, this baseball's always been in my office, and it's always been in a prominent place. And not once in the history of having this baseball in my office has anyone ever asked about this baseball. And I'm telling you this not to shame you, because a lot of you have been in my office and you've never noticed. And so it's okay. I love you for who you are, okay? But I just want to point out that this office that sits, this baseball that sits in my office, it should be somewhat unique, because if you know me at all, you know that I don't really like baseball. I like basketball. And so the fact that I have a baseball should spark something that says, hey, what's going on there? But the fact that the baseball is in a case, if you're going to take time to buy a protective case for a baseball, there has to be something going on. And so if you took the time to notice that there is a baseball in a case in my office, I would tell you that this baseball is signed by actress Julia Roberts. And you would say then, that is weird. Why do you have a baseball signed by Julia Roberts? And specifically, it says, Peace and Love, Julia Roberts. And it's one of the only autographs I have in my office. But if you were to ask me about it, I would tell you that the reason I have a baseball signed by actress Julia Roberts is because when I was a senior in high school, my dad went TDY to Haiti. And if you want to talk about a significant part in my life, it's that I learned how to drive when my dad wasn't there. And I went to things like homecoming when my dad was serving our country over in Haiti. And I'm not bitter, I'm not angry, but it left a mark on me. And if you talk about a baseball, you'll see that I care a lot about my family. And this isn't just a baseball with a famous actress's autograph. It's a baseball given to me from my dad when he was over in Haiti. He bought us a gift. It was baseballs. They sell them really cheap over in Haiti. And he ran into Julia Roberts. She was there for like a Peace Corps gathering. And when he met her, he said, all I have is this baseball. Will you sign it? And she said, I've never signed a baseball before. But he gave it to me because he knows how much I love actors and I love Hollywood. And he knows that she's one of my favorite actresses. And so this goes on a shelf in my office. And I tell you that just to say that I think that every single one of us in here has baseballs and shelves and offices, and we're dying for someone to pay attention to them. And what if love was simply showing up and noticing the details of the people in our life? What if love was simply saying, you know what, I noticed you've been kind of sad lately. And I'm not saying this because I'm scared of your sadness. I just want to get to the bottom of it. Or I noticed you've been really happy. What's going on in your life? I want to celebrate with you. Or I noticed you've been really angry and I don't know what's going on. Listen, you can't shake me, but I just want to get to the heart of it. What's causing you so much anger in your life? I just want to be here for you. What if love was simply paying attention to the people that were closest to us? Psychologically, you are not wired to love people that way. But as a Christian, Paul would say, love must be sincere. And like a muscle that needs working, you have to work out your love for other people. You have to train yourself and work hard and work on your relationship with God so you have the strength to love people out of an overflow of how he's loved you. That we choose to love other people. Difficult people, people that stretch us, people that don't agree with us, people that don't vote like us and talk like us and believe in God like we do. We are called to love other people. Love must be sincere. Learn to put other people ahead of yourself. What if love was simply paying attention? This week as I was writing the talk, I came across this image. It's a meme, and this image I think says so much about our culture. And about what love really is. It's going to come up on the screens for you. I'm going to read it to you. It says, people were created to be loved. Things were created to be used. The reason the world is in chaos is because things are being loved and people are being used. If you're here today and you would agree with that, I would say that you play a part in helping reverse this. That people weren't meant to be used. And the way that so many of us love is we love someone as long as they benefit us, but as soon as it gets difficult, we just swipe them to the left and get rid of them. But love must be sincere. It must be real. And you have to choose to love and to honor people above yourself, even when it's difficult. So here's the application. This is what you can work on this week. Who can you love this week by simply paying attention? Who can you love this week by simply paying attention? Who is in your life that would benefit from you shutting down your cell phone and looking them in the eyes? Who is in your life that you've taken for granted because they've been there for 3.5 years or more? Who is in your life that you could show how much you love them by simply paying attention? Don't you dare ever assume that the people in your life know that you love them. Don't you dare. Love must be sincere. And if you're a Christian, we are called to love people even when they're difficult, to love them without wax, to be real. How different would our world be? I guarantee the church would be a place where people would take off their masks if they knew this was a safe place to be themselves. And we may not agree with everything that everyone does, and we may have different standards and different values and even believe different things about God, but we are called to love people like God does, not because they benefit us, but because they are a child of his. Love must be sincere. Will you guys pray with me? God, we just come before you right now, and we just ask, God, that you would just remind us this week. This wouldn't just be a talk that we hear and we listen to on a Sunday, but that, God, this would be something that would challenge us, the challenge of the heart of who we are. I pray right now, God, that you would just be putting people on our minds and our hearts who we can pay attention to. God, give us ideas and ways to make the people that we're closest to feel special and feel loved. God, would you open our eyes? Would you help us to take our attention and our eyes off of ourselves and to pour it on to you and to pour it on other people? God, would you help us to take off our own masks so that other people can know that they can take off theirs? I thank you, Lord, for loving us well. I just ask you to help us to love others like you love us. In Jesus' name, amen.